Welcome to G.L. Horton Stage Page. Today is Sunday, the 17th of December, 2006. Today we have another edition of our Art Salon Boston, this one featuring G.L. talking with Will Stackman and Jonathan Myers. We also have a monologue read by the excellent John M. Costa. First, though, a short update on what's happening on the Boston theater scene this week. The holiday season is a busy time for theater around Boston. Not only are there several choices of nutcrackers in the area, but both the New Rep at the Arsenal Center for the Arts and the North Shore Music Theater have satisfying music-filled versions of Dickens' A Christmas Carol. The New Rep is also opening a revival of John Kuntz's hilarious rendition of David Sedaris's Santaland Diaries. Gene Shepard's A Christmas Story is running at the Slonim Theater and at Arlington Friends. The Regal Players Holiday Variety Show is filled with local talent. They have everything in Waltham the Rockettes have downtown at the Wang, and free parking aside. Zero Point opens Dan Sullivan's farce, Inspecting Carol, this week at the historic Durrell Hall at the Cambridge YMCA. Christmas Revels is at the Harvard Sanders Theater for the 35th year, and Black Nativity is playing downtown at the Tremont Temple.
A man who lives in the Five Corners area has an interesting hobby. He collects manuscripts by hopeful playwright. He does this using several similar aliases and claiming to be in charge of non-existent theaters in several states. A couple of playwrights figured out what he was doing and shared this discovery, warning others not to be fooled by him. Some more writers joined in. They too had been his victims. My Woman Playwrights organization issued an amusing challenge. Make this the plot of a batch of plays. The Scam Guy scripts. Who is this guy? Why does he do this? I wrote two of these plays myself, Happy Hour and The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Here's the Scam Guy's monologue.
Thing is, any fool can write a play. And as I learned the hard way through stupefying experience, only fools do. Normals get out and work at something sane. Once upon a time, I was a Lorette Theatre's literary manager. My job was to read the slush pile, unsolicited scripts, and at first I did. Oh my god, I can't describe the boredom. The mind-numbing, nerve-shattering, unadulterated boredom. How can writers string together every behavioral or verbal cliché known to mankind and still not hit on a plot? Or even just by accident, a character? As for what passed for ideas, from this mountain of tedium, I would dutifully extract the 0.1% of scripts that showed even a glimmer of promise, and dump them into what our artistic director optimistically called development. Development? Give me a break! There were two sorts of playwrights circulating the system. The, my words are from Mount Sinai and engraved in stone, assholes, and the, please somebody tell me what I should write, wimps. And neither of them can be developed any more than a prune pit can grow into a pine tree. The system's utterly screwed. There's always a system. Anytime you have two factors. One, somebody's pouring in money, and two, nobody really gives a shit. The money is for development, not for plays, so development is what you get. How long should it take a writer to figure out he's never going to get a production? A month? A year? Five? But they never learn. Now, listen to this. The demonstration. Oh, he'll be there, sitting by the phone waiting. Writers can't help it. Attention is like catnip. Ken! Jay Bailey here. How you doing? Oh, I'm fine too. Better. I'm really in a kind of glow here. My board was really positive about your play. Your writing impressed the hell out of them. Yeah, we do, really. Unfortunately, we won't be able to, though. At least not next season, but I do want to hang on to it. See, right now, we just don't have anybody in our casting pool who could do it justice. Yeah, for Allison. I mean, What would an actress who could play Allison be doing here in Roanoke? But we do have somebody great who'd like to work with us. Not just a good actor. Killer draw. If we could find this guy the right vehicle, we'd have to beat off his fans with sticks. It occurred to me that maybe you might have something else that, older guy. Semi-retired. Big and made for TV flicks in the 90s, but good. Made his chops early with Pinter and Shakespeare. No, I can't say his name. You understand. 'Cause his effing agent doesn't know he's looking to do an effing play out in the sticks yet. Even if you don't watch TV, you'd know this guy. He's a household word. Thing is, you gotta play with a part for him. Strong, charismatic, versatile. A guy who could do the Scottish play or Tyrone in Long Day's Journey. Great. Pack him up and get him to me. Attention, Jay. You got our P.O. box, right? Terrific. Can't wait. If he likes your script, we're golden, Ken. Gotta go now. There's a VIP heading into my office. See? Like candy from a baby. Ken will send along another signed cover letter, carefully worded to sound sane and important, yet modest and friendly. He's hooked. Probably send 3 scripts overnight express. From a fool who'll believe anything, 'cause believe is what he does best.
That was John M. Costa reading a monologue from GL's one-act play, Happy Hour. Now on to our featured discussion on the state of theater in Boston today. Please welcome GL Horton and her guests, Jonathan Myers and Will Stackman.
I have always wanted to write plays of the sort that Tom Stoppard has a trilogy on a social issue, historical event playing in New York.
Yeah.
The closest thing that an American has ever done to that is Richard Schenkhan's Kentucky Cycle.
Yeah, that kind of Angels in America. I
mean, kind of, it had 2 parts, right.
He goes all over the place.
Right, the difference is that there are 20-some people in Stoppard's play,
and there
were 9 people, 8 people in Angels in America, only all triple and quadruple.
Yeah.
And even that was a major, enormous risk, and they would never have put that play on if they hadn't gotten an NEA grant to do it with.
Mm-hmm.
It's just impossible to do the kind of theater that I like both to see and to write in a context where there's no subsidy available.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if there were subsidy, I wouldn't get it, but that's another problem. I'd like to see at least somebody writing the kind of plays I like best, if not me.
Well, and the thing to me is that I feel like we're never, as playwrights, trying to connect to each other until we're really, like, kind of unified. And we talked about this a little bit last time we were here about the notion of advocacy. Is that if we don't form some sort of unity among just us playwrights, that kind of stuff can never really happen. Unfortunately, because I'm just a lone playwright, and maybe I'm a member of Playwrights Platform, I do my thing at Shadowboxing, and I show up and I get a reading and I do this, and then there's a stoppage there between that and the world of production that is going on with Huntington and with the bigger companies and the companies who do self-produced plays, which is good and all, but it's how do we bring that together?
We need somebody who has a genius for, I don't know, whatever it is you call, not entrepreneurship, but whatever it is, the quality that made it possible for Tina Packer to walk into a foundation and say, I want a Shakespeare company.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to run it. I know how to teach actors. I know how to excite school children about Shakespeare. I can do this if you'll just give me $200,000.
Or John Jory setting up Mulan.
So we don't need 300 playwrights picketing the place. What we need is a few people who meet some of these good playwrights and say, yes, I really want to start a theater with you and you and you and you. Like Ellen Stewart did with La Mama. She picked 6 or 8 people that she thought could probably write good plays and said, I'm going to get a space. And she went and asked for the money and she got a space and she enabled them.
It was a lot cheaper then.
Right.
But the thing is, we already have those kind of things here.
Well, like what?
Well, we have 11-11,
Yeah, but their families...
Brian is the
Yeah, I mean, these things are...
That's why he does his plays.
These are family and friends outfits. What you need is somebody who knows how to speak to the larger community, who can act as an advocate, a mentor, interpreter, salesperson.
Like a Russ Tutterer.
Who knows how to...
Like the head of Chicago Drum.
Yeah, that's what we need. We need somebody...
Well, in a way, that's kind of what I hope. I mean, I don't consider myself that person. But, like, I'm trying to be an instigator to pull this Boston Playwrights Inc. work of playwrights together.
So we should write a letter to Russ Tutterer and say, send us the next you?
Yeah, I don't know. But it offers a place where that person can emerge rather than just getting kicked down. Because I noticed that Boston's the kind of place where, you go, unlike other cities, it's a lot harder.
Noticed that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I call it the Boston apprehension. There's like this...
If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere, and nobody ever has.
Yeah.
There is no successful Boston playwright in spite of the incredible range of talents who has passed through here.
It seems like I see a lot of people that they just want to, they get some experience here and they go somewhere.
Because they don't see a path to the next level here.
There's no culture. The culture is in petri dish. Like
nutriments.
Yeah.
There are no nutriments.
Well, and that's a good example.
Around.
Well, wouldn't it be great to have Russ Tutterer come and hang out for a little conference thing over the summer to talk about? Well, what is
but
it like?
But he should
there?
Bring his disciple with him.
Who's that?
Whoever it is, I have no idea. Oh, but somebody who has the same range of skills, but isn't at the end of their.
Lydia Diamond is teaching. She's teaching at the CFA at BU.
What's the CFA?
College of Fine Arts. Separate from Boston Playwrights. She's a resident playwright, or has been a resident for really long.
Yeah, I went to her lecture when she
was
here.
Wonderful. Yeah. And she's here.
Gee, is that one of the, I wonder if that's one of the classes I could take for $50.
Check out.
Might be able to. She teaches some really neat stuff there. The playwrights are having some success, that are coming out of her classes. The playwright theater classes are helping people out and get some work out there. It's good. But, the neat thing, I think what we're talking about here is this notion of communal events. The idea that rather than just moving towards sort of isolated productions, which are out there already, how do we use the Boston Playwrights Network to gather people together for certain events, quarterly almost?
And to make just pure name recognition in the sense that people get the idea that there is such a thing as a Boston playwright.
Yeah.
That playwrights don't all come from New York and Los Angeles, or they make it come here to go to school, but then they go on to places where they take original material seriously.
Well, we also got to try and encourage people to go and go see, listen to what is going on. This week, Carl Rossi had a reading at Boston Playwrights, and very few people were there because he got the announcement out way late.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing our calendar can help. I didn't even notice that until it was too late.
Yeah.
And the other thing.
And then one of your CFA's final plays for the semester is Rhoda Noon's Brendan, which of course is read last year. It's in the Wimberley. And about the first five rows were full.
It's not cheap. If somebody says, come and see a play in a kind of embryonic form, something with lots of promise, but it's not quite there yet, I'm willing to do that if I've been exposed to the person's work before and found something interesting. But I'm not willing to pay $20-$30 for it.
I don't have
$20-$30. I've spent my whole life as a playwright. I don't have any money.
But Carl's was free.
Carl's was free.
I think the Brendan.
And if you're a BU student, you can get in for $5 at Brendan.
It's actually they're charging for.
Yeah, they're charging.
Is it a full production or is it just
full
a
production? It's got a
super.
Reading last year. That was
Okay, that's what it was. Okay.
No, this has got a big expensive overdone set from the scene shop, which the director didn't quite figure out what to do with. Most of it is done in front of the set rather than with the set.
But nevertheless, it has lighting and rehearsal and reasonably talented people in it, and you get a good idea of what the play is like or what the play could be like if it had another little round of work. And that's very important.
Yeah, so too.
Even if that particular play doesn't ever get fulfilled, seeing that stage of your work is a great source of hope and improvement to people who get to that stage.
So kind of what I'm hearing, though, along with this, is that for Boston Playwrights Network, or for, you know, this group that may emerge that we're kind of working on, there needs to be some sort of an event.
Calendar, you suggested.
Well, that would be more related to communication, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Like someone who's involved with, like, the communication and keeping up the organization. But I think the events, what we need is, like, an events coordinator, almost, something like that. Like, and looking for somebody that would be a people person that knows a lot of people who can call this person or that person and bring people together and can be involved in, like,
if we could convince people to make sure that their meetings get on our calendar in time, and then there's somebody who reads that calendar and says,
well, and how
prods a few more people to come.
And how long should a reading last? That not time of the length of the play, I don't mean, but how many read-throughs is a good, useful number for the playwright? And secondly, shouldn't all of them have some kind of a reception, celebration, talk back, something
almost everybody does a talk back.
Yeah, but that's not always useful. One where the playwrights notoriously say that when they get their useful comments from the talk back isn't in the formal talk back where everybody sits down and tries to say something intelligent, but when you go out for a beer afterwards and you're in a noisy bar and you're shouting across the table.
Somebody who likes to do parties.
Yeah, we need somebody who likes to do parties.
That does it for this week, and thanks for stopping by. Hope you enjoyed the show and come back again real soon. As always, your comments and suggestions are appreciated. Please visit www.glhorton.podomatic.com or www.stagepage.info and leave a message. Until next week.